There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
All right, you mug, see? Listen up and listen good. We got us a surefire job here, see? These suckers have got a shiny new series in this podcast, see? Called This Looks Like a Good Place for a Stick-Up. That's what they're calling it, see? It's a whole new series of heist movies, get me? Movies where the whole gag is snagging the cabbage and bagging the dosh, see? And we're honing in on the action. They're starting off with this limey film, see? The Lavender Hill Mob with this moke Alec Guinness in it, huh? Huh? No, Squelchy, nothing to do with the beer company, although that'd be a good score, eh, boys? No. We're gonna hijack this podcast ourselves. That's where the big money is. Let those other jamokes sniff around after Deep House and Rogue Warfare 3. We're going big time, see? We're heisting the whole dang series. Now, here's the plan. First, what's that pony doing kicking down the door? Oh, hamburgers, it's the heat. Cheese it, you guys. Everybody shave your heads, become Trappist monks, and we meet at the meetup point in 25 years. Amscray. That's right, you miscreants. No one is making off with our new series here at Max Mike Movies Central Enforcement Patrol Security Yard Enforcement Patrol. I'm your host, Chief Body Inspector Max Smith Smythe Smith Levine, and over there, preparing to slap the cuffs on the lot of these ne'er-do-wells, is Special Sauce Constable Mike Lim Bim Tim Biscuit Barrel Ole Loose. Take him away, Constable.
What is wrong with you?
I honestly don't know.
Can we bring the pony back in here? I think we're going to need another co-host. Kick to the head maybe would help.
That would help, yes.
And another for Jenny and the Wimp.
But before any boots to the head may occur, we have some important business, which is, of course, our...
poll question.
Last week, we wanted to know, what is the best example of a cinematic mix of violence and comedy, and should they mix at all? Brad Albertson says, the Deadpool movies. Yep, that's a good concise one.
Yep.
Absolutely. Dr. Stephen Kellner says, three categories of answers to that, I think. Trust a doctor to categorize.
Be nice.
Funny violence, cartoony violence, in which case some of the Naked Gun movies might count, because the violence is purely laugh-inducing. Example, O.J. Simpson bouncing down the stairs at the end of the first movie, which has a whole new level of comedy for me nowadays. Yeah, I could watch that over and over and over.
And you have.
And I have. Two, movies that incorporate real wince-inducing violence into the comedy for comedic effect.
Huh.
Deadpool, for sure.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
That's fair. And three, movies that are comedies but have elements of real serious violence in them and convincing violence, not holding back. I think Gross Point Blank is a great example of that. There are some terrifying fights, such as John Cusack fighting a fellow assassin in the hallway,
ooh,
who turns out to be his martial arts trainer, Benny the Jet Arquidez.
Hi-ya!
So they were really mano-a-mano convincingly, since they knew each other's moves, but the chase scene towards the end is both violent and hilarious. Oh, thank you, Steve.
Yeah.
Very comprehensive.
And see our entire episode on Grossy Pointy Blanky.
Indeedy. Jamie Kleinert says, Snatch, because as the plot unfolds, the violence and comedy have to both be there to work together. I never know if it's an action movie with comedy or a comedy movie with action.
Hmm.
That's a point. Deadpool,
yeah,
because the violence lends to the comedy as well as the plot. Deadpool doesn't hold back from making fun of itself or its genre. That's certainly true.
Yep.
I agree with the three categories that Steve posted before. Both Snatch and Deadpool fall into the second category he listed. I think Monty Python's Holy Grail might fit into the funny violence category for me, and I'm not sure what I would pick for the comedies with violence. Maybe that's where Snatch really belongs. The Phoenician Scheme might also fit there, which I think is deserving of a mention as well.
Oh, don't know that one.
That was on Netflix. I haven't actually watched it. I don't remember if it's a Wes Anderson thing or something.
Nah, it's all Greek to me.
No. I don't get it. A disclaimer.
I know you don't.
I am not a huge fan of violence in general, and my husband gives me grief for enjoying Deadpool and Snatch as much as I do, and was shocked when I enjoyed the Phoenician Scheme. He was expecting me to walk out after the opening scene. Oh boy, what's that scene?
Uh-oh.
Byron Ho says, Kung Fu Hustle.
We got a coincidence for you.
Oh, extraordinary. Brad Albertson injects, Byron Ho loves the cow scene. I'm sorry, Brad. I think you are confusing Kung Fu Hustle with Kung Pao Enter the Fist, where a guy does have a martial arts duel with a cow. Regan McStravick says, I would agree with Gross Point Blank for sure, and probably Deadpool as well. But another one I really like, just because the comedic effect is entirely derived from the over-the-top absurdity of the violence, is Shoot 'Em Up. Okay, that'll come up again. Oh. Gun Shy is also a good one.
I don't know.
Immediately following, Keith Wright, who we know from the second greatest podcast in the known universe.
Cue Footsteps. Oh.
That's the one. There is a movie called Shoot 'Em Up with Clive Owen and Monica Bellucci, in which he plays a hitman. There's a scene where she's holding a baby and he's fending off multiple attackers. It's funny and violent. Also, Stephen Chow's movie Kung Fu Hustle. You know, great visuals and comedic violence. Yeah, Shoot 'Em Up is something. There's also a sequence where there's a fight scene while Clive Owen is having sex with Monica Bellucci.
Yeah. I hope he's shooting blanks.
Nick Hoffman says, Kung Fu Hustle was a complete revelation for me, as I'm sure was our entire episode on it.
Mm.
Chuck Mock says, Jackie Chan. Most, but not all of his movies. There are some really good things he's done that aren't comedy. One with trains, one with Silk Road, I think. For comedic violence, I think his improvised weaponry is world class, with special achievement in the shopping cart category. I forget what movie that is, but yes, he uses a shopping cart to deadly effect.
Yeah, I don't remember that one either, but it's been actually, I need to go back. I haven't watched a lot of Jackie Chan in a long time.
Yeah, the classic Hong Kong ones. Yeah, yeah. I haven't seen those in a while. Brian Mundo says,
I wonder where he's going.
I don't know. If only there was a campy sci-fi action comedy that involved maybe like a futuristic society and some threat to that society, but then a ragtag team of heroes saves it while getting some good laughs along the way. Nothing really comes to mind, though. Oh, well. Oh, wait! Fifth Element, of course.
Our new goal is to come up with a question, a poll question, that Brian cannot answer Fifth Element to.
Oh, that's easy. We start every question with, apart from Fifth Element, what movie?
Okay.
Yep. Kelly J. Cooper says, in terms of recent movies, I enjoyed Fight or Flight with Josh Hartnett. Ooh, no, I didn't see that. I think it falls under the real wince-inducing violence for comedic effect, per Stephen Kellner category. It was ridiculous, but with a surprising amount of heart.
Oh.
In terms of all-time favorites, it's a three-way tie between Jackie Chan's Drunken Master, Jackie Chan and Michelle Yeoh's Police Story, Super Cop, and Michelle Yeoh's Wing Chun.
Everybody Wing Chun tonight.
Wing Chun tonight. Yeah.
Oh, come on. Yeah, that fruit was scraping the ground.
It was just sitting there.
I think I trod on it.
David Meiselman says, I like how some of Tarantino's movies mix both. Pulp Fiction has some very funny lines. That is true.
Sure.
Tim Potter says, apparently, George Bailey is worth more dead than alive. No, sorry, wrong Potter. I think Kill Bill would fall into this, another Tarantino. It took the violence to a level that was just comical at times. This is what happens when you screw around with the Yakuza!
Yeah.
David Farrell said, Kelly's Heroes. Oh, wow. Oh, okay. Mm. World War II movie.
Mm.
Tatum inventor Richard Tatum says, Shaun of the Dead. Okay, yeah. That is definitely comedy and a lot of violence.
That's one of the Cornetto trilogy, isn't it?
It is. Mm. Charles Forsyth points out, Deadpool and Wolverine is a frantic mix of graphic violence, sharp comedy, and plot? No. Pathos? No. Character development? No.
Henry the mild-mannered janitor?
Could be. No. Just the first two things.
Yeah.
My runner-up would depend on whether or not you consider Begonia a comedy.
Oh.
Some people do, some people don't. I haven't seen that yet.
Me either.
It looks like it could be both.
It was up for Best Picture, wasn't it?
I don't remember if it was up for Best Picture, I think it was. But I think Emma Stone was up for Best Actor for it.
Oh, good for her. I like Emma Stone. Mm.
Yeah, and that fine Irish laddie, Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading, basically just sent a photo of Uma Thurman from Kill Bill.
Ah, no essay this week, huh?
No way, essay.
No. That made my head hurt. Don't do that ever again. Whatever that was, don't do it.
You're just prejudiced because I'm Mexican.
You're not Mexican. And
they don't know that. They can't see me, senor.
Oh, dear God.
Sure. The Levinez clan. Very, fine. Very big.
You're going to be that way. I'm going to do my lousy French accent for the rest of the episode. Huh?
Not French, that's Belgian.
To be fair, that's probably true.
Over here on our sizzling hotline.
Ow, I'm so hot.
Yes, indeed. We have my own little buttercup, Doris Hempelmeyer.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. This is Doris Hempelmeyer here to answer your poll question, which just happens to be, what is the best example of a cinematic mix of violence and comedy, and should they mix at all? Well, sure, why not? When you start getting scared, then you can start laughing, right? So I'm going to give you three real quick, because these are all ones that I've enjoyed. The funniest one being Naked Gun, the whole series. I mean, come on. Just watching O.J. Simpson get hit by a steamroller. The next one I'm going to give you is Lethal Weapon. I mean, some of that stuff, I mean, the whole thing with the toilet seat. And the last one I'm going to give you is Die Hard. Yippee-yay-yay-yay. I won't say the rest of it because you're a family show. But anyway, those are my three answers. I hope you have a wonderful week, you guys. I'll see you later, Max. Bye.
Okay, those actually all kind of work with Steve's categories, yeah. Although I think Naked Gun for the first and Lethal Weapon and Die Hard are more in the third, because there the violence is much more realistic, but that's a good spread.
Sure.
But those were all terrific. Thank you. And what about you, Mike? What's your favorite mix of comedy and violence, apart when you hit me?
And that is funny. I hate to say it, but it is funny. I'm going to go with Bugs Bunny. Honestly.
Oh, that is good.
I mean, the violence is always, if you, and this is what angered Action for Children's Television back in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, that's right.
They hated the violence. And it's like, you realize nobody takes this seriously but you, right? Yeah. Like, nobody goes out and does this. But
that's a really good example.
Hitting people with a frying pan or an anvil or a giant boulder is funny. I'm sorry, but it is. And the whole point is, you know, that's slapstick taken to its extreme. So, yeah, there's a lot. I mean, Deadpool, quite honestly, if I was going to go with a live action film, I'd probably go with Deadpool, because it's just, the violence is ridiculous. People are getting blown up. There's body parts and stuff. But it's funny, which it shouldn't be.
No, but it is.
Yeah, so that's what I would say. But what about you? This was my question. So what would you say?
Bugs Bunny is a good one, but I honestly didn't come up with that. That's a really good idea. I got a couple, and one of them is our last week's episode, Kung Fu Hustle. Yeah. I think that is just an absolutely brilliant blend of violence and comedy. And the other is another in the Cornetto trilogy, and that's Hot Fuzz.
Oh, okay.
Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. Mm. I think the violence in there is so over the top, and the comedy is brilliant. I really think it's wonderful, especially when you realize in the final huge fight segment, nobody dies.
Oh.
There's an enormous amount of injury, but as they show you with the mugshots at the end, nobody gets killed.
I never seen it. I only saw the only one of the Cornetto trilogy I saw was World's End, because we did it for the show.
Both of the other two are a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, and they are a darling couple, aren't they?
They are adorable. They are adorable. I wish they'd just get married. These were terrific. Thank you so much. A lot of good essays there. And we want more, because our hunger for such things is insatiable.
Yeah.
Insatiable, I tells you.
Hungry.
So we want to know, who's your favorite cinematic criminal?
Ooh.
And we'll tell you how to answer that later on.
Radigan. Oh. Maybe not.
Radigan the Brown?
No, that's Radagast.
Yes. And now, the facts. Budget. This was surprisingly hard to track down.
No.
The closest I got was $32,000.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 50s British. And
Alec Guinness was not a huge star at that point. He'd only been doing movies for a few years.
Well, I mean, they filmed it in so many exotic locations.
Yes, here in Backlotistan.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah. The box office, though, the equivalent of $580,000.
Oh.
So it was a big success.
Yeah, well, that's good.
If you're interested, the money that they're going after 1 million pounds.
Yeah.
Okay, that doesn't work as well. In 1951, which would be about the equivalent of $50 million today.
Probably worth going after.
Serious money. I didn't realize this. The director, Charles Crichton, this is the same guy who directed A Fish Called Wanda.
Really?
Yep.
That's like 30 years later.
Yep.
Cripes.
He hung on there for a while.
And action. Oh, my hip.
My hip.
I can say that because Max is Jewish.
Yep. What?
Oh, I'm sorry. Mexican.
C. Gringo. Oh, wait. He was one of the Beatles, wasn't he?
Go on.
Ealing Studios, planning a bank robbery movie, actually asked the Bank of England to devise a way in which £1 million sterling could be stolen from the bank. The bank formed a special committee to come up with an idea, and this is the one they used in the movie.
Really?
Yeah. I assume they changed their protocols after that.
We'll come back to that, yeah.
In the opening sequence, did you recognize the woman playing Chiquita?
I didn't, but I happened to glimpse a little something on IMDb when I brought up the page for the cast, and I was like, really? But please, yeah. Do enlighten us.
Audrey Hepburn. Alec Guinness gets nuzzled by Audrey Hepburn, that lucky bastard.
Yeah.
She was considered for a larger role in this movie, but stage work made her unavailable. Alec Guinness was so impressed with her that he wanted her to appear in a bit part. This is generally considered Hepburn's first appearance in a major movie.
And she nails it.
She does. She has two lines. She's on screen for 8 seconds.
I didn't notice her, but that's okay.
Sir Alec Guinness was paid £6,000 sterling.
Ooh.
It's about $240,000. His regular salary at this time was £25,000 sterling. So he really wanted to make this movie.
I guess so.
This was in a period of his career where he was making a lot of very odd little comedies. This, The Man in the White Suit, The Lady Killers.
Star Wars.
20 years later, but sure. The line, of all sad words of tongue or pen, the saddest are these, it might have been.
Felix Unger.
It's taken from the poem Maud Miller by John Greenleaf Whittier.
It's not Felix
which
Unger?
I totally knew without looking it up.
I'm pretty sure it's Felix Unger.
Plagiarizer. This, by the way, kills me. This is the first theatrical debut, even though it's uncredited, of Robert Shaw.
Oh my gods, really?
He is the chemist at the police exhibition. Most of his performance ends up on the cutting room floor, but he's there in the background. I don't think he has any lines. When Holland and Pendlebury decide to chase the little English schoolgirls from Paris to Calais by taxicab to get their loot back, they kind of overlook the fact that the distance from Paris to Calais is 294 kilometers.
Well, as you all
know, that's a hell of a cab ride.
Well, that's metric, though, so that's actually all about 40 feet in...
no.
I think it's 40 feet. That's what it works out to. I checked. 20 feet?
Oh, if only we knew the metric system, I could argue with you.
I can spell it.
T.E.B. Clark, the writer, was originally meant to do a sequel to the popular police drama, The Blue Lamp, but he decided he'd rather write a comedy. This movie has been selected by the Vatican in the art section of its list of 45 great films. Oh, those wacky popes. Lavender Hill is an actual part of South London.
Oh.
As of 2022, it's a popular shopping and eating area, as well as a residential neighborhood.
Just like the rest of London.
So you could actually go there and form a nice mob.
Sure.
Alec Guinness later wrote about a terrifying incident that happened to him while filming at the top of the Eiffel Tower. Yes, part of that was on location.
Yes, part of it was.
Part of it, yes. here we are in Le Rear Projection.
Shh.
The director instructed him and Stanley Holloway to open a workman's access hatch in the decking and run as quickly as they could down the spiral staircase below it. Guinness did this only to discover that after half a spiral, the staircase had broken away, leaving only a sheer drop hundreds of feet to the ground.
Ah!
He just managed to stop himself 3 feet from the edge and sat down before gingerly creeping back up to safety. Turns out no one thought to check the staircase before shooting the scene.
Ruh-roh.
So they eventually shot it on a soundstage back in London.
They did? I don't believe it.
I know, you wouldn't think.
We'll come back to that.
A little, you know, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon sort of. 13 years after this film was made, Stanley Holloway, who plays Pendlebury, appears as Audrey Hepburn's father in My Fair Lady.
Oh.
Yep, he's the one who does with a little bit of luck.
What does that got to do with Kevin Bacon?
Everything has to do with Kevin Bacon. The song the girls are singing during the school visit is the Eton boating song. I know that was eating away at you.
Wheaton? Eton.
One of the rationales the filmmakers considered in not allowing the mob to get away with their crime is because of the prevailing censorship criteria in the U.S. that would have cost them the lucrative American market. The Hayes Code stated criminals cannot get away with crimes.
I wondered about that. I just didn't know it was our fault.
The UK had no such rule. The filmmakers wanted to have it. However, T.E.B. Clarke also says that he wanted Dutch to get away with the crime, but the Lord Chamberlain's office insisted that he be caught by the police.
Huh.
I don't know why the Lord Chamberlain is reviewing movie scripts.
What else have they got to do?
Weird piece of British law enforcement trivia. In the car chase scene at the end, an officer uses a police box to report seeing a police car being driven in a man in a top hat. In fact, the driver's wearing the uniform of the police as originally set up in 1829 by Sir Robert Peel. That's why the cops were known as bobbies or peelers.
But then later, that particular costume was repealed.
Oh, I see what you did. I don't get it.
I know. Kick him again, would you, Bumpy?
Ow!
Gotta get that BB in the hole.
Well, there's other stuff, but that's most of it.
I'm amazed you found that much for a 1951 movie.
Yeah, well, Alec Guinness, he's in it. They're going to dig.
Mm.
But now, the plot.
Le ploté.
Oh, excuse me. Le plot, or the plot, jolly old chap. It's 1950s London, which has not begun to swing like a pendulum do yet. Mr. Holland, not of opus fame, is a humble, self-proclaimed non-entity. A clerk working in the bullion department of a major bank. Little known fact, up until 1965, the British pound was based entirely on soup. It's true. Don't look it up. Bullion. Anyway, Holland is fed up with his job, which largely entails riding in an armored van with a mass of gold that he only gets to look at and not eat with crackers. Wait, wrong kind of bullion.
Yes.
He spends his days reading crime novels to an old woman in a boarding house in the Lavender Hill neighborhood. And if there's a bright center of the galaxy, that's the neighborhood it's farthest from. Holland seizes on the idea of stealing the soup, gold, in one of the trucks, but how to smuggle it out of the country? That's 1 million pounds of gold. That's like 500 tons.
50
that's
pounds.
A lot of gold.
50 pounds.
Oh, right. But fortuitously, he meets up with Mr. Pendlebury, a fellow who makes souvenir junk for tourists, including small lead models of the Eiffel Tower painted gold. He even has his own foundry. I sense a cunning plan in the making.
And you couldn't sense a cunning plan if... Never mind.
Yeah. The two become fast friends, recruit two actual petty criminals, and prepare to pull off the heist of the century. The plan seems sound, but will it work? Will they be able to get the gold out of the country disguised as R2 droids? I mean souvenirs. I'm sure it'll work if they just use the Force.
The film.
Wow. I don't think we've had a plot mangled since... Ooh. I'm going to have to go with Deep House.
It was flawless.
Until you got a hold of it, but...
Oh, let us talk about our cast.
Yeah, because there's at least one person I've heard of.
Well, for me, there's two, but yeah. It's Sir Lord Baron Duke Alec Guinness.
He wasn't then.
No, he was just Al. You could call him Al.
Sure.
Or you could call him Betty. He liked that too, but we don't talk about that.
No.
Yep. Alec Guinness. Like I say, he was doing a lot of comedy back then. Alec Guinness came to movies a little later in life, the first about 20 or 30 years. He did a couple of kid parts, but he was a stage actor. He was Royal Shakespeare Company.
Yeah.
Then he went nuts with the films.
Yeah, his knee-slapping comedy is just whoo, over the top and hilarious.
He is the straightest of straight men in this.
He is and he isn't. There are times later on as the film progresses, and I do want to come back to that, where he gets a little bit more towards the acting that we saw in Murder by Death. Because in Murder by Death, it was an Alec Guinness that we hadn't seen in a long time. And especially at the end when he's portraying all the other characters.
Doing six different characters. Yeah, yep.
Which is pretty funny. It's also then that you realize, oh, he's tall. I didn't realize Alan Guinness was tall. Because in this movie, he doesn't seem tall either.
No, he acts shorter.
I think it's fair to say most people know him from Obi-Wan Kenobi and so on and so forth.
Ooh.
Yeah. Most people. Max is definitely not most people. In case you hadn't realized. Yeah.
Star Wars.
Yeah. So it is a different Alec Guinness than we're expecting. If you have ever seen Bridge on the River Kwai, not the same Alec Guinness at all.
Nope.
So, and I think he's generally pretty fun. It's a light part.
Yeah, this is more Kind Hearts than Coronets than Bridge on the River Kwai.
Never saw that either. So, yeah. I mean, he's fine.
Yeah, I think he's great. Stanley Holloway as Pendlebury, goes around quoting Shakespeare and poetry and everything. I think he's a lot of fun. And I do remember him as whatever Mr. Doolittle's first name was, Doolittle, in My Fair Lady, and he's hilarious.
He reminded me of Stanley Adams, who played Cyrano Jones from The Trouble with Tribbles.
Oh,
and God. Unfortunately, a giant carrot on Lost in Space.
Oh, God.
He had that same kind of acting where he's very boisterous and, you know...
Mr. Holland. Friend Holland.
Kind of. I'm not saying that there's, you know, he's ripping anybody off because I don't, you know, Stanley Adams hasn't shown up yet. But, yeah, he's a much more broad character, I think is fair to say, than is Holland, played by Alec Guinness.
But they're both so likable. I mean, Holland you don't think is going to be. He's so straight-laced, and he's so fussy.
Well,
you figure he just...
But that's not how we start off with him. We start off with him throwing money every which way down in South America, jolly old chap.
He totally is in South America. You can tell because there's someone there with a mustache. So. Yeah,
and Audrey Hepburn, who's from South America. She's probably not even from South London. But
her swarthy, dark, good looks. Yes.
Yeah, that is my second note. Here we are in genuine South America, jolly old chap.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're fine. They make a nice little pair.
Hey, and you've got Alfie Bass is Shorty. He has been in everything, a lot of small parts in English comedy throughout the years.
If you say so.
He is. He was in the Fearless Vampire Killers. He's in Moonraker.
Is he?
Yes, as his character is Consumptive Italian.
Ah.
Yeah.
God's Moonraker.
Yep.
Whoo! No, wait, you skipped over Sidney James. Isn't that the other crook?
I did. Lackery? The hell is it? Lackery? No, it's Lackery.
Lackery.
Yeah. He's another British comic actor who's done a lot of bit parts.
Between the two of them, they kind of remind me of the Shropshire Slasher. It's just like that point where he's like holding it, he's talking to his mother and he's holding his hat and he's nervously playing with it. Yes, mom. I mean, they're sort of like the gentleman crooks, right? Yeah.
Well, I also like the fact that Lackery says, I can't go to Paris. Why? Me wife won't let me. What? She won't let me. I can't go.
I think it's fair to say, and even safe to say, that the relationship of these characters to actual criminals is, shall we say, stretched.
Yeah, these are the nicest, most trusting criminals ever.
And trustworthy.
And we'll trustworthy. Come back to that too. Oh, we believe you'll come back and pay us the money. That's all right. How is it Lackery and Shorty don't just murder Holland and Pendlebury and keep all the gold for themselves, apart from the fact that these are the guys with the plan to get it out of the country?
Right, because it's worth more in the continent, apparently.
But also, they can't sell it. I mean, you cannot walk around with bars of gold bullion and try to sell them in England. Even in this country, it's really difficult.
I mean, good luck. I mean, the things weigh about 25 pounds a piece.
Oh, more than that. A bar that big almost 50.
Well, that's what I heard was 25. It's from an Encyclopedia Brown story. That's how I know.
Oh, well, that's
because there's
be
one
true.
Point Never where. Mind. No, see, because there's one point where there's somebody holding one over their head, and Encyclopedia Brown goes, that can't be real gold because it would weigh 25 pounds. That's how I know.
And no one can lift 25 pounds.
That's right. Not a kid, anyway. Yeah, not over their head. After that, we just have a bunch of people, really. I mean, there's nobody that really... Although, the guy, Ronald Adam, who played Turner, looks a lot like the guy who played Alan Brady on the old Vic Van Dyke show.
Yeah. And the other inspector, they're like two inspectors. One of them grows up to be Mr. Belvedere.
Oh, does he really?
Yes, he does.
I always wondered if Mr. Belvedere was actually British, because his accent always sounded kind of fake, but okay.
Yep.
So, yeah, we have a bunch of British actors that most of us probably haven't seen before, which is fine.
Yeah, they all do their jobs well.
They do their jobs, so, yeah. So, now, you had seen this before, or
had you? I had. I actually saw this in the movie theater, you know, showing...
In 1951?
Yes. I went back in time and watched it in 1951.
You went back in time.
No, really? I saw it in a revival theater.
Ah, like the Brown.
In fact, they were showing... Actually, I think it was the Orson Welles, because showed a bunch of them. That's also where I saw The Man in the White Suit and The Lady Killers. In fact, I think it might have been a double feature. And
that would be a triple feature.
But I haven't seen it since.
Well, that would have been 80s,
many,
right?
Many years. Yeah.
Yeah, 40 years ago.
Yep.
It's actually more time since you last saw it than when it was first made and you first saw it, which is not a very interesting fact, but it is true.
I was told there would be no math in this show.
I heard there was going to be refreshments here.
I was told there'd be punch and pie.
Yeah. The opening of the film has something in it that I never knew the origin for a joke from Gilligan's Island.
Oh?
There's an episode of Gilligan's Island where a bunch of movie-making equipment shows up on the beach, and they decide the best way to get rescued is to make a movie and then ship it off, and hopefully people will find it.
Doesn't it end up at the Cannes Film Festival?
It wins a bunch of prizes and stuff. But the opening of the film has Gilligan and this big gong. And I was like, that's weird. I've never seen that before and wonder what that reference is. And it turns out there was some British film company that's where it came from, because I'd never seen it before.
I've seen that in other old British films, the guy with the gong. Oh. It's kind of memorable.
Yeah, I've never seen
that. My first note is, oh, good, the British Board of Film Censors approves this movie.
Well... It's also terrible because obviously they took the form that you need because somebody has handwritten in the name Lavender Hill Mob. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not even particularly well written, but then it's up on the screen so you can look at the certificate, like something you'd have to post in the lobby. And it's
might have been like a legal thing. Maybe they had to do that.
I'm sure they did. It's just like, couldn't you get it printed nicer? Like, we can see the blank where you like the ink still wet. Yeah. Like, come on. So, and you know, that's actually led me to one of my suppositions, which was the ending was the way it was. I just thought it was their issue, not ours. But never mind the Lord Chamberlain, Lord Protector of England and his warts.
Oliver Cromwell. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have never seen this.
No.
You still haven't.
Have I heard of it? I think I may have heard its name in passing, but I didn't know anything about it. So
maybe you heard there was a rock band, I think, in the 70s that called themselves the Lavender Hill Mob.
I'm sure it wasn't the Ant Hill Mob.
I'm pretty sure, because I think they were all over 2.5 feet tall.
Wow. That's a wacky races reference.
Is that deeper?
Where do I pull these things out of? You don't want to know.
Yes, whatever it is you're saying.
No, I had not seen it. Mm-hmm. I had not seen it. Oh. Oh. No. So I had not seen it. I had not. I didn't know Alec Guinness was in it. Didn't really know anything about it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I would say that we start off in, as I said, South America. But then we see what his job is. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly... It doesn't take, although he's supposed to be doing this for 20 years, it doesn't take either Alec Guinness's character, Holland, or the audience to go, hey, you know, there's this truck full of gold. I wonder if, I think that was actually kind of nice. I think we both get the same idea at the same time, the audience and the main character. Did you notice that, or was that a thing?
It made sense to me. I mean, especially the way he talks about himself in the voiceover about how he was such a non-entity. It's just like you get the real feeling of someone who has been doing this so long and he's finally had enough.
Well, of course, we're lulled into thinking he's done it and gotten away with it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Although, yeah, we got to come back to that part too. But anyway, So, you know, it moves into seeing him being tired of his job. And of course, just as he's really tired of his job, he gets a promotion. But it's too late to go turn back now because he's already met his new roommate, or I guess housemate, which is Pendlebury, who is a maker
friends.
Of fine lead paperweights sold to children.
Yeah, hey, good healthy lead.
Mm.
In fact, let's paint their cribs with it.
I mean...
Yeah.
I mean, I know why they had to say it was lead, because, of course, lead and gold weigh about the same.
Yep.
Have the same density. You're my density. So, I just was... Were they still been making lead? Maybe? I don't know.
Oh, come on. They were still making lead soldiers. Hell, we played with lead miniatures.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah. I had a whole
The best thing about those miniatures is if you didn't have a pencil, you could always take your miniature and write stuff down with it. Right.
Yep. Big hunk of lead.
So yeah, they get together, and then it doesn't take much to convince Pendlebury, really, because we don't really see Alec Guinness wrestling much with this moral conundrum. And also, quite honestly, and we'll come back, we have questions for this series.
Yeah.
And the security is well known, let me put it that way. Alec Guinness understands the boundaries of the security of this job very well. Let's put it that way. But then they said, well, we need more than us too. We need other people. So what do they do?
Yeah, they basically walk around going, they're on the tube and yelling at each other, can you come over and fix my safe tonight? It's broken and won't close, and I've got the entire payroll in it. Oh, dear, you could get robbed. That's not good.
I mean, it doesn't set you up for a lot of confidence in this whole gig, right?
Well, and also, how confident would you be in the people who showed up?
Yeah.
Like, well, this can't possibly be a trap.
Oh, and then they show up, and of course, you know, once again, they're nice and polite generally. One of them has a gun, but that, you know, nobody plans on using guns. I mean, maybe British gangsters were nicer. I don't know.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, the Bobbies didn't have guns either, so no, maybe.
Stop. I'll say stop again.
Yeah, kind of. So I don't know.
Yeah.
There was a language problem, though. Did you have a language issue with this film?
Not particularly. What do you mean?
There's a bunch of slang, especially when the two bad guys show up, and I'm like, nope, I literally have no idea what you just said.
Oh, okay. I don't think that bothered me too much, I think.
Were you watching with subtitles?
No.
Oh, yeah, I didn't either. So whenever they were talking, it's like pigs in a blanket, snake in the grass.
Bubbles.
Yeah. I mean, it was no big deal, because luckily we have our upper crusters, you know, Pendlebury and Holland.
Yes, to translate.
Yeah. And your point earlier is, we've got these two new bad guys. I guess we can just trust them, and they can just trust us, because...
Yeah.
Oh, right. I mean, stuff and reasons.
It does
stuff
come
and
up.
Reason, I mean, stuff and reason go together like stuff and reasons.
Nice save. I mean, toward the end... When they've got the gold, they're shipping it, and they realize they've got to get out of the country. They've got to get to France. And Lackery can't go because his wife won't let him. And Shorty doesn't want to go because he's got a sure bet in some horse race that's coming up.
Right.
And they say, you know, he's like, you know, you can't get paid until we go there. He says, yeah, but we know you'll come back and pay us. And they're like, really? He says, yeah, you two are upright. We trust you. And it's actually kind of touching. I mean, yes, it's completely unrealistic. But it's
there
very
is that part.
Because Holland just looks so proud of that they trust him.
Yeah. I have a question for you, though.
Yeah?
Does Shorty and Lackery get away with it?
I don't see why they wouldn't. There's no evidence linking them to anything. All of the gold's out of the country. I'm sure that neither Pendlebury or Holland would talk. They wouldn't implicate them.
But they don't touch on that in the film at all.
We don't see that. We don't even see what happened to Pendlebury. We assume he went to prison, but...
Yeah, I guess. I mean, that he does... I don't know. He doesn't get away, but Holland does. He gets all the way to South America.
Yes. Yes.
Now, wasn't the deal with South America that there wasn't any extradition? Like, I thought that was...
South America, you got to remember, is a continent, not an individual country. Some of the countries...
It's a city, Max. You should know. It's a city.
South Americaville. Yeah. Some of the countries down there have extradition treaties. Others don't. I think...
Argentina?
Most of them do have them with the UK. I don't know about with us.
Guy Lombardo?
Sorry, Argentina?
Because that's where all the Nazis went, right? Because you always head south, and that way you couldn't go anywhere or whatever. I don't know.
They had world extradition. It's just the Argentine government was willing to hide them.
Oh.
It wasn't like they were living on the street saying, I am Hans Gruber. It's more like,
I love tacos and I love burritos. Yeah, hello. I am from here a long time.
I am Rico Suave. That is my name.
Yeah, well, we're not offending people left and right, are we?
No.
Yeah, so I don't, they were kind of a loose end.
I can say that
because
I'm Mexican.
God. Next episode, you have to wear a sombrero the whole time. Okay. That's it. We're done. So I was a little surprised that we don't kind of know what ends up happening to them.
Yeah, but I would have liked at least a throwaway line.
Yeah.
But
I was also disappointed there was something missing in this film with all of these policemen, all these inspectors, Scotland Yard. Yes. Not one of them stumbles into a scene and says, "What's all this then?"
True. And no one says, "You're nicked, chummy."
Yeah. Just like, you know, I expect this from the British police.
Absolutely. They were falling down on the job. I mean, we do get a police officer singing "Old MacDonald Had a Farm," which personally I think is adorable.
I just couldn't figure out why.
Oh, he's just into it. He asked for a lift down the road, standing on the running board of the car. And
yeah, just like old MacDonald did.
Well, because of course, well, Mike, you obviously don't know how radios work, because when two cars bump into each other and their antennas wrap around each other, one of them will begin broadcasting what...
They have a baby?
They love each other. I don't know.
It was just like Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah, it's a it's a funny moment, but it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Before I forget, let's get to the special effects.
Okay, like the hat and the coat falling off the Eiffel Tower?
Well, that too, which was obvious. But I got to say, one of my biggest laughs was watching both Stanley Holloway and Alec Guinness running in place as the spiral staircase supposedly went around them. And it was... how shall we put this? Not convincing
at
all.
Not terribly, no. Yeah, you have no trouble believing this was on a soundstage.
Yeah. I did think, however, that the photography of looking down the central core of the Eiffel Tower was pretty cool. There was some good photography there. Very much making me want to go, never, nope, not going up that thing. And I don't even think you can use the staircase anymore, which is probably a good thing.
No, you can. You absolutely can.
Can you?
Not that spiral one. They have a much safer one now.
Oh, well, that's what I'm saying. That's the fun part about Europe. If folks listening have not been to Europe, the safety precautions that they take there are, how shall I put this?
Not?
Well, it depends. There's a lot of old castles and stuff, and it's basically like, don't fall.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Hold on to the railing. Watch the steps.
Oh, railing? I've been in castles where the railing is a rope.
Yeah. No, that's what they count. They count it as a railing.
Just don't. You know, just don't. Okay? Don't. I'm sorry. Don't. Just whatever you're doing, but don't do it. There. Now we've taken care of it. In some ways, I think it's both funny, and I actually kind of find it refreshing, because it's like, look, don't do anything stupid, okay? We'll trust you. If you do anything stupid, you know it's your fault, right?
Yeah.
Yes, we know it's our fault. Then okay, you can climb to the top of the cathedral. It's okay. Here's the 600-year-old tower. It's probably fine. Oh, you may notice that these stone steps are all worn down in the middle and treacherous, but just keep your eyes open. You'll be fine.
Uh-huh.
Whereas here, it's like, you know, this 20-year-old building is closed because a pigeon pooped on the windows. You know.
Yep. The paint colors are two different shades. You can't go on there.
Yeah, we're no fun at all.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, saving lives and life in them, okay, please. But...
We're also a really litigious country, so...
Yeah, there's that, too. So there's a big tonal shift in this film.
Yeah.
Did you not notice a big tonal shift in this
film? Well, I do notice that it's fairly easygoing and funny, and then suddenly we get, you know, a lot of tension as they're chasing a bunch of schoolgirls.
Yeah, calling out Madeline. I was kind of confused because I thought that it's like you realize you're putting yourselves in way more danger by going after those Eiffel Tower statues than by leaving them alone. Okay, It is worth a certain amount of money. A very small percentage of the rest of this giant million-pound take. You're really going to go and try and track these girls down and not seem weird and creepy and talking to them in their British school, the same country that you stole the gold from? Okay.
Yeah, also,
five of them back, but the last one was taken to a police convention.
Yeah, that's an unfortunate coincidence. And then there just happens to be a cop there who goes, huh, I'm going to dip this in the nitric acid that dissolves every metal except gold, which, by the way, is true.
He only does that.
It's a pure form.
He only does that because they show up
and
are making a deal about it. And it's like, ugh. If you just left it alone, you'd be fine.
If they had left all six of them alone, what are the odds that someone's going to go, oh, I'm going to test this child souvenir and see if it's real gold?
Right. And even if they do, it's probably going to be years later. Like it falls off a table and, oh, that's funny that paint came off and, oh.
Yeah, I think they panicked too much. But again, these are not career criminals, Pendlebury and Holland.
No, but they seem more or less competent until the little girl part. And I don't know about you, but as soon as Pendlebury says, oh, no, not those cases. I mark them with an R so they know never to use them unless I tell them in Paris. Ha ha. And I was like, okay, here comes the twist. And sure enough.
Yes, it's a whole pronunciation trouble. That is not an R, that is an air. It's like, wait a minute. Oh, come on. They really don't know. They've worked with the English before, and they don't know how to pronounce the letter. Really?
Yeah.
Well, that was a little much, but I don't mind.
I found the tunnel ship, it started to become a little bit too slapsticky and a little bit too farcy at that point. And I don't mean the language, but I mean the going after the little girls, it seemed they suddenly become bumbling, and they hadn't been bumbling until that point.
Because most of their stuff, they had it carefully planned out. Here they're improvising, and they aren't good at it.
I guess. It was a tonal shift that I found a little bit jarring.
Okay, that's fair.
So we have these questions.
Mike just gave me a couple of very subtle hand gestures, which fortunately don't translate.
That's the one we agreed upon, so I didn't want another way to signal you without telling the audience, which I have now done. So thank you, Matt.
I'm helping!
Would you like to ask our questions? Because we have questions for this series. We haven't done that in a while.
No, we got a set of questions that we're going to try to apply to all the movies in our heist series. One, is the loot worth all the effort?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah. I mean, the equivalent of $50 million today split among four people? Yeah.
Considering what little amount of work and planning they actually had to do except for the hiring of random strangers, there wasn't a lot of outlay. So.
Yeah, I mean, and if they can live the high life for a year in generic South America on 5,000 pounds, they'd do just fine.
Yeah.
Two, is the plan believable?
I think in this case, question two and question three are very closely tied. Yes.
The three is, does the security as depicted make sense?
No.
I don't think so. I'm sorry. A truck full of gold and you have two guards? Two? Yeah.
And Alec Guinness.
Yeah. And even in 1951, you could create a more secure door that couldn't be pried open with a crowbar.
Well, and the tires aren't even protected by anything. It's just like shoot out a tire, whatever. But the usual shipment is about 500,000 pounds. They say that. But this one just happens to be double the normal. You're not going to add more guards or anything?
Yeah. Or have an escort car? Something?
Something.
And the thing is, they follow the same route. Every time.
So question two, to me, the answer is yes, because the answer to question three is no.
Yeah. The plan and in a way it makes sense because Holland knows the security inside and out. In effect, he knows how bad it is and how you could take care of it with four people.
Yeah.
So four, are the guards/cops/defenders too underpowered? Well, they don't give them guns, but that's the way it is in England.
I mean, they're not the brightest group of Keystone Cops I've ever seen.
But the investigators are pretty good. I mean, they do track them down. So I'd say, yeah.
But how much is it them tracking down and how much is it, just happened to be at the police convention. I don't.
It's close for me. I'd say maybe. And the fifth one, do we find ourselves rooting for the heisters, criminals?
Thieves. Yeah, it's Alec Guinness.
Honestly, yes. They're so charming. Cute. And
look how nice he is with his money.
Yes, he's very generous. Yeah. Everyone loves him because he's so generous and has great parties and supports all the charities. There's also, and this is actually a very clever point of the movie, they're stealing from a faceless entity, from the bank. I don't even think we know which bank, do we?
No, and we're not even sure what the deal is with the gold. Like, oh, we're taking the shipment of gold. Well, where's the gold coming from?
Okay, that wasn't just something I missed. I was like,
no.
Where are they getting this gold? Where are they taking it? And then he says, and you'll get it back.
Well, my guess is that they're selling it to the government for the basis of the pound.
Okay.
And then they get actual pound notes later on.
That doesn't work, though, because England went off the gold standard in 1931.
Oh, I thought they were still on the gold standard. Oh, we held out longer then. Otherwise, we couldn't have Goldfinger.
Only by a few years.
Really? Oh, yeah. That's right. We just still kept it.
We just like having it.
I don't even know if we still have it, because nobody knows, but whatever.
Oh, no, they took it out. That's where they keep the UFOs now.
Fort Knox. Right, okay. So we like the thieves. They're nice. They're not going to hurt anybody.
Well, and they're so English. They are so bloody English.
And so are we, and you know what else is English? Us getting to the end of the show where we decide whether we like and or recommend the Lavender Hill Mob.
Very, very, very nice transition there. And again, I'm not English. I'm Mexican, you gringo.
The finish.
He Mexican't. But Max, what do you think of the Lavender Hill Mob?
I think it's fun. I think it's a nice, lighthearted little movie. It falls apart under too much scrutiny, but it's not designed for heavy scrutiny. It's a showcase for the acting, and I think the tension is really good toward the end. I got drawn in. I'm like, oh God, are they going to get them? Even if, again, it didn't make any sense. Why are you bothering these children? Let them keep the damn Eiffel Towers. They're not going to know. But what about you? You'd never seen this. It was your first time. Mm-hmm. How did it work for you?
It's okay. I think it suffers from being a product of its time. So it is light and fluffy. It gets a little farcical for me towards the end. It doesn't quite venture into Jerry Lewis territory, but I think it's next door. The performances are fine. Mm-hmm. Well, they are. But that's why I think them chasing after the little girls is a little bit much. It doesn't really, to me, they don't seem like chasey characters. They seem more like, you know, thinking characters more than doing characters. And then it gets, the girls are giggling and stuff. And it's like, okay. And also the fact that, not only did they all just go to Paris, they also decided to bring their Eiffel Towers back to school and put them in their desks. So isn't it lucky that they all happened to be in the schoolroom?
Yeah, that's a little strange. I mean, those have got to be heavy, even if they think they're made of lead.
Yeah.
Those still got to weigh like, I don't know, 5-10 pounds.
But, you know, there you go. Mm. So it's cute. Yeah. I guess cute is fine. I'd say it's more charming than it is funny. I didn't really laugh out loud, but it's cute. Yeah. If you are somebody who likes older films and you actually would like to see a film that involves heists and doesn't involve a lot of violence or a lot of, you know, back and forth with the cops and, you know, too much tension, this might be a great film for you.
Yeah, speaking with no violence, I mean, they're supposed to tie up Holland and beat him up, to rough him up to make it look like he would, you know, make the hostage thing more realistic. And they run away, and he has to beat himself up and throw himself around, tear his own clothes.
I don't think he meant to throw himself in the Thames, though.
Probably not. Not when you're tied up like that. That's hard, pretty dangerous.
To swim. Yep. So, yeah, if you like older films, if you want a little bit of fluff, sure. Mm-hmm. I think Max liked it a good deal more than I did, but that's fine. It's okay. But you know what else we like?
What do we
like? We like your answers to our poll question. Max, would you go over that again, please?
I will. This is a simple poll question from my village, deep in the heart of Mexico. Mexican. Yes, it is Mexico Village, deep in Mexico. I lived on Mexico Street. It's because
just give us the question, would you?
I can't. I'm having a siesta. But yes, now we want to know, who is your favorite cinematic criminal? And you can leave your nefarious answer in all sorts of ways. You can email us at us@maxmikemovies.com. You can also go to our website, maxmikemovies.com, and leave an evil comment. No, just a comment. An evil comment? An evil petting zoo?
No, just a comment.
You can also find us on Mediated Socialness on Facebook and Blueski under Max Mike Movies. You can find us on the podcast app of your choice. And of course, like my little buttercup, dear little buttercup.
Don't sing.
Sweet
no singing.
Buttercup. Sorry. You can call our hotline at 617-398-7266. That's 617-398-7266. And leave us a voicemail and we will play it on the air and answer it. But we are just starting off this fabulous new series. This looks like a good place for a stick up. What's our next heist movie there, Muggsy?
Well, ooh, Muggsy. You have to call me Muggsy from now on. Max Muggsy Movies.
Okay.
It's because I use a mug. Okay, so...
What?
I was looking at our list. We have a lot of heist films. Turns out Hollywood likes to turn these things out once in a while, like every 6 months or so.
Who'd have thought?
And I came across one that wasn't on our list that I had never seen before. And it's a film that has more than one sequel. So I'm wondering, it might be good, even if the Metascore wasn't all that high. So I would like to watch a film called Now You See Me.
Oh.
Now You Don't. Except that there's no Now You Don't part. I guess it's just now. It's actually got some surprisingly interesting people. It's got Morgan Freeman in it. It's got Woody Harrelson in it. And other people. They're magicians. And they steal things.
Oh, is it Harry Potter?
No, and it's not even Bill Bixby. Oh. Boy, there's a deeper. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Next week, you will definitely see me. Because now you see me. Next week.
But then they won't.
But now they
now
will.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.